Now we read together in Psalm 8. Let's read again verses 3 and 4 from the Psalm. So this is David, who spent many, many nights out on the hill with the sheep around Bethlehem. And no doubt this is written out of that experience. When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have set in place, what is man that you are mindful of him, the son of man, that you care for him? You probably didn't know this, but this is Lunar Communion Sunday. Lunar Communion Sunday. Buzz Aldrin, who was one of the three astronauts on Apollo 11, was an elder in Webster Presbyterian Church. Webster's a suburb of Houston, Texas. And after the Eagle had landed, the lander had landed on the moon, Buzz Aldrin opened a little package he'd taken with him, with a little cup, a little wine, and a little piece of bread. And they were given about an hour of just peace before they were to go out onto the moon's surface. And watched by Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin took communion, served communion to himself on the moon. He read scripture, he prayed to himself. And so, Webster Presbyterian Church today will be celebrating Lunar Communion Sunday, a special one because it's 50 years since the first Lunar Communion. And this week, you really can't have missed it unless you've been living in a cave somewhere. This is the 50th anniversary of the first landing on the moon and the first moonwalk through the Apollo 11 mission. It successfully landed two men on the moon, Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin, where they spent over 2 hours walking on the surface, taking photos, planting the obligatory flag, collecting samples, performing various scientific tasks, and jumping around and generally enjoying themselves in the low-gravity environment. It was a stupendous achievement. For mankind to actually be able to do that. Highly risky. It could so easily have gone wrong in so many ways. It's amazing that it worked out and that we were able to do it. And it helped, I think, to open the eyes of mankind to the amazing cosmos that we live in. And for many, one of the most enduring images of that mission was of the Earth viewed from the moon. The Earthrise. So you're on the moon and the moon is turning towards where the Earth is and the Earth comes up over the horizon. And because there's no atmosphere in the moon, there's no kind of, you know, like we have a blue sky because we've got an atmosphere. If there's no atmosphere, it's just the pitch black of space. And the Earth rising up against the pitch black of space with stars dotted around. And it profoundly affected the astronauts who saw it. Like, that's where we live. One of the others on a later mission, you know, was deeply deep. In fact, no, it was on the mission where they orbited the moon first. It was at Apollo 8. He was deeply, deeply affected by, from just seeing as they were gliding over the moon, the Earth rise, and thinking, that's where we live. That's where everything that mankind has ever done and achieved is. And it's tiny, fragile, and vulnerable. And we need to look after it. These were his words. So, the Apollo missions changed our perspective on the Earth that we live in. because the Earth was seen from somewhere else. It was seen from the moon. And we got to see a different perspective. Perspective is important. People are really good at losing perspective. It's one of our tragic human skills that we so easily lose perspective and begin to think that we're important, big shots. You know, we begin to think that, you know, we really are quite something. We're quite something, we can travel to the moon. We're quite something, we can command a big wage. Or we can build a muscular physique, or we drive an impressive car or whatever. And we get to thinking about ourselves with pride and with arrogance. And we get to thinking about ourselves as though we don't need God. And we don't even consider him. And Apollo 11 was an opportunity for us to get a very different perspective. It's the sort of perspective David is coming to in the psalm here, in verses 3 and 4. You know, when I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have set in place, what is man that you are mindful of him, the son of man that you care for him? What is that perspective? What is David expressing there? And I think it's humility. It's a sense of his place. That his place is a very small place in the overall scheme of things. And yet God cares for him. He's moved to deep humility as he thinks about himself in the world. What's your own perspective on yourself? Are you a person of profound humility? Do you have that sense that David had of being a very small person in a great big cosmos, and yet God cares for you? Do you have that sense of that humility? I want to think this morning about some reasons why we should have humility in relationship to the moon. And the first one is, we should have humility because the universe is full of wonders. Wonders. Moons are wonderful things. It's a privilege to have a moon. Not all the planets have moons. Mercury and Venus don't have moons. The Earth's got one. Next out is Mars, got two. And then you go out to the big ones, to Jupiter and Saturn, Uranus. They've got lots. Jupiter has 79 moons. Saturn has 62 and so on. But the thing about our moon is it's by far the biggest moon in relation to the size of the planet it orbits, of any of the moons. There are only a few moons that are bigger than our moon, but they're going around huge planets. But our moon is really big compared to the Earth. So it has a really important presence and a part to play in the way our planet operates. And you can think about things like the tides and the weather and all sorts of things that the moon has huge influence on. And God made it. Now, it tells us that so many times. David tells it here in verse 3. The moon and stars you've set in place. Psalm 136 we sang. God made the great lights, the moon and the stars, to govern the night. It's a wonder. And like wonders that we see every day or every night, we can easily stop one being full of wonder. We had an opportunity to renew our wonder earlier in the week. On the anniversary of the liftoff of Apollo 11, there was a lunar eclipse. Unfortunately, here it was cloudy and we couldn't see it. But there were lots of images relayed of a partial eclipse of the moon, where the Earth puts the moon into shadow, and the light from the sun shining through the Earth's atmosphere illuminates the moon, and it's red as a result. Great sight, great thing to just marvel at, great wonder. And the moon, really, when we see it, however it is, whether it's full or it's just a sliver of a new moon, or whether it's an eclipse, you know, it should just be a wow moment every time. And the universe is full of wonders like that. Wonders far beyond man's capability. God's work. Your heavens, he says in verse 3. When we go out, as we're privileged to be able to do in this part of the world, in the long winter nights we have, and sometimes the Milky Way is so clear, and the stars are vivid, and the auroras in the north, and so on. We can say, this is your heavens, Lord. These are your heavens. What am I? What am I? To be filled with the wonder of God and what he has made, but have a deep sense of humility before him, because they're his wonders, not ours. Nothing that mankind does compares with God's wonders. Another reason for humility is scale. The scale of things. We are tiny. And space is vast. Truly, truly vast. The Apollo 11 mission took about 4 days to get from Earth to the Moon. Travelling at four times the speed of sound, at 3,300 miles per hour from Earth to the Moon. Now that's fast. It's quite hard to get things to go that fast. 3,300 miles per hour. It took 4 days to get to the Moon. The nearest star to the Earth, apart from the Sun, is called Alpha Centauri. Travelling at 3,300 miles per hour, how long do you think it would take to get to Alpha Centauri? This is the nearest star to the Earth, apart from the Sun. So if you wanted to say, okay, we've done the Moon, let's go and visit another star and its planets, how long would it take travelling at the Apollo 11 speed? And the answer is 874,000 years. 20,000 generations of human beings would come and go before a craft travelling at Apollo 11 speed would reach the nearest star. That's how vast space is. And that nearest star is really close compared to most of what's out there. It's really close. Space is absolutely vast. The Moon is the only thing we're likely to visit for the next while. Maybe Mars, although that's a lot more difficult. But we're not going to visit anything else for a very long time if the Lord tarries and if somehow we work out some technology that can get us going places a lot faster than what we can do just now. The Sun is unapproachable, the stars are unreachable. Compared to space, we are absolutely tiny. And so as David, I think, had some appreciation of that, because he could see the scale of things in a way as he looked up. He says, what is man? And yet you care for us, Lord. There's a good reason for humility, that we are truly tiny. And yet God cares for us. Another reason is that our world is full and our cosmos is full of mystery. Now, David really couldn't have any inkling of what's out there in space. The Moon for David was something unreachable, completely unimaginable, really. It was all a mystery which he couldn't understand, a big mystery. And that leads again to his humility. Like, you know, what is this? It's your heavens. I really don't know what it is. Now, we are in a much better position to understand. We have considered, as verse 3 says, we have considered God's heavens a great deal through astronomy over the last couple of hundred years in particular. And we've discovered that it's more amazing than David could ever have imagined. But the more we discover, the more mysteries there are, the more puzzles. And again, mystery is something that shows us the limitations of the human mind, the limitations of our ability to understand. There's so much out there that we just don't know. And there are all kinds of signals coming from outer space, and we don't know where they came from. We don't know what origin they have. You know, things like gravity waves and bursts of radio waves and gamma waves and all sorts that are coming in a wave. You say, what's going on out there? It's a place of mystery. And again, we're out of our depth. What is man that you care for us? Another reason for humility is that David knows that this vastness, this mystery that he sees above him, it's God's creation. God is the creator of it. Your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars, which you have set in place. And so he thinks to himself, God made this. And if God made this, how great God must be. How truly immense God must be in his being, in his power. And in comparison to God, what am I? And again, there's that humility. So do we stand with David in this? It is good for perspective to take time to wonder like that. To go out at night when the stars are in the sky and think about these things like David does here. And think about the mystery and the scale of the cosmos and the fact that God created all of this. It's good to do that. And to ask, what am I? Because so often we get really self-important and full of who we are and what we can do. And it's good for us to be reminded how limited and small we really are and how great God is. And it's great for us to think that the God who made all of this cares for us. As David says here, he cares for the Son of Man. Cares for us. David, of course, he went on to be king. We don't know what stage of his life he wrote Psalm 8, but he went on to be a very, very powerful and important ruler. And maybe he would think of these words in terms of how important he could easily think of himself to be. Verse 6, you made him rule over the works of your hands. Now, of course, that's going back to Genesis and the general sense that God gave mankind a dominion, which was supposed to be a caring and good dominion. Well, David can think of this personally too. He is a ruler in every sense over the kingdom of Israel. And that kingdom expanded greatly under David because he was a great leader and organizer of men. And, he had that sense of everything under his feet, flocks and herds and beasts of the field and birds of the air and fish of the sea. And yet, looking up to the stars, he reflects and says, actually, I'm just a speck, just a mite. I'm just a grain of sand. And God is so great. And yet, he cares for me. Why? There's a humility there. Why does God care? Or how? Why? That's the question. It's a question that we can't answer by pointing to ourselves. We can't say, well, he cares because who wouldn't care for me? We can't say that. We can't say he cares because I deserve it. No. But he does care because he is a God of mercy and compassion and love. And he shows that care. You know, we think, as I said at the beginning, it's a great achievement for man to put a person on the moon. But think of that in comparison to the achievement for God to put himself on the earth in the person of a man, Jesus Christ. God shows his care by coming as the son of David, by coming as a descendant of David through Mary and Joseph into this world to set foot on our soil. So while you can still see Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong's footprints on the moon, Jesus left God's footprints on the earth. He came to this world because we needed him to. Because without him, we were lost. Without him, we were just tiny specks in a vast universe with no future. But God sent his son, Jesus Christ, into the world to live among us righteously, to die for us sacrificially, to pay for our sins, and to rise from the dead, and to take that human body into the presence of the Father until the day he shall return again to judge the world and to transform the creation into a new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells. So what humility we should have as we think about these things, and how we, you and I, should respond to God with a deep sense of perspective on him and on ourselves that leads us to wonder, and it leads us to gratitude, and it leads us to humility, it leads us to worship, and it leads us to put our trust in him. Buzz Aldrin, in a television broadcast on the 23rd of July 1969, just before they splashed down and landed on Earth, he said this. He said, "This has been far more than three men on a mission to the moon, more still than the efforts of a government and industry team, more even than the efforts of one nation. We feel that this stands as a symbol of the insatiable curiosity of all mankind to explore the unknown." And then he went on like this. "Personally, in reflecting on the events of the past several days, a verse from Psalms comes to mind. When I consider the heavens, the work of thy fingers, the moon and the stars which thou hast ordained, what is man that thou art mindful of him?" And that was broadcast across America. Because Aldrin, as a Christian man, wanted the world to have the perspective that we've got here in Psalm 8. A humble perspective of man before a great God who cares for him. And he wanted the world to hear that. He wanted to broadcast his communion service to America. But NASA was afraid of a lawsuit. Because a few months earlier, the Apollo 8 astronauts had read Genesis, the book of Genesis, on Christmas Day 1968, when they became the first humans to orbit the moon. And a leading atheist in America, Madeleine Murray O'Hare, you may have heard of her, sued NASA for broadcasting Christian propaganda, as she saw it. And she was all for the separation, complete separation of the state and the Christian faith. Her lawsuit failed, but it put the fear in NASA of another bad publicity lawsuit. And so when Buzz Aldrin proposed to flight commander who was in charge of the whole mission that he would broadcast the communion service, the commander says, No, just keep your comments general, he said. Not Christian. And that's sad. You know, that in a universe where man is tiny and God is massive, and NASA was in a better position to see that than most. NASA was scared of a woman who would sue them, rather than simply being willing to say, well, truly, we are in a great universe, and the one who created it is a great deal greater than Madeleine Murray O'Hare. Don't let that happen to you. Don't let the fear of man overrule your awe of God, because it can so easily happen. Yeah. There isn't any person who's done anything particularly great in this world. No one is particularly important or big or has achieved all that much, really. God made the moon. Now that's an achievement. God made the stars and the sun and the earth and the creation, the life that we have around us. He made it. So, whom should we tremble before? Not our neighbour. And not the people we work with, and not people in our family. What can man do to us? We should tremble before the living God, have a deep humility before him. He cares for us. He sent his son for us. And it doesn't really matter what Madeleine Murray O'Hare or what any man or woman threatens or says or does. They are specks. They are grains of sand. They are dust compared to the living God. So let's make sure that if we just grasp something from this Apollo commemoration, it is that renewed perspective on who we are and our place in this world. We live in a place where we shouldn't be trembling before other human beings or scared to speak about Jesus because of what they might do. Because we live in a cosmos created by a great and a glorious God. Cosmos that is vast and full of wonders, full of his creative genius. And he's the God whom we should be more. He is God, and we should be more aware of him than anything else or anyone else. And have deep humility before him, and worship him, and trust him, and serve him. And it doesn't matter what people see. Because he is a great God. And what is man that he's mindful of us? The Son of Man that he cares for us. But he does. And that's our wonderful message to take to the broken people around us in Kyle.